I'm a cocoa man. Took over a rice plantation back in the 20s, rolled up my sleeves, reorganized the soil, got it to do what I wanted it to do, and put in cocoa. Rice erodes the soil, you see, in the uplands. Southeastern province is the richest in Sierra Leone. Lovely crop, cocoa. Harvest it, and you don't feel bad. Not wicked like you do when you put a chopper or a saw against a tree. I'm soft about trees. I prefer them to people, if the truth were known. Anyway, that's enough about cocoa and trees. I've got a story to tell. And it's one of the most impossible you've ever heard. One of the most impossible anyone ever heard. I wouldn't believe it at all if I were you. It wouldn't make any difference to me. Unfortunately, I'm stuck with it. Because, you see, it all happened to me. The oddest night of my life. The night of the visitors.
Beyond midnight.
It was the time of night I liked the most. The half hour or so just before dark. Dimmit light, it used to be called when I was a boy. Dimmit light. The birds were kicking up a noise in the background. The crickets were joining in. I was sitting on my stoop feeling nostalgic. I used to sit there every night, and more often than not, I felt nostalgic. I can afford nostalgia. I'm a bachelor. I miss kids, of course, and the softness of a woman, but you can't have your cake and eat it too. I don't know what made me look up when I did, but I did look up, towards the garage, as it turned out. And there he stood. Philip Milton.
Hello.
What can I do for you?
Been from? Have you come over from... Sorry there was no one here to meet you. We've all been down in the valley cutting up some of the deadwood for the fires. Getting awfully cool here these nights, you know. I'm Philip Milton.
He held out his hand at this point. I was a bit confused. I was going to ask him what he'd meant by saying there'd been no one there to meet me. When he continued.
We found another cotton tree fort. Those early Mendes must have been jolly frightening. Worse by far than the Zulus. I said, do come in, please. I'll get you some liquid refreshment.
Mr. Milton, I'm sorry, but you better explain what...
Oh, funny. Where's Juju? Oh, do come in, won't you? The others are a long time. He's very lucky I left to run back. Matter of fact, I came back for the card affair we have up here. Terribly handy for carving wood.
What the devil's going on? He's a lunatic.
Oh, do come in. I'll prepare a little refreshment, and then I'll run back and tell the others we've a visitor.
Mr. Milton, I'd be very grateful if you could perhaps explain.
We've had the very devil of a time with servants, you know. We had a capital boy once called Fergus. That was David's name for him, actually, and he hiked off and... Funny?
I'd followed him into my house. My house. He was behaving like no other guest I'd ever entertained. On the contrary, he was playing host to me. He strode into my main room, making expansive be-at-home gestures with his hands. Large hands they were, I remember. He walked across the room, across to the window, and one of those large hands motioned as if to pick something up. Something in the corner. He half stooped as he did this. Then he straightened up again and looked round. And he seemed puzzled, a bit upset.
Some bounders moved the drink. I'll kill Stuart. I really will. Terribly sorry. What must you think? Oh, heavens, he's been playing musical chairs again. I say, sorry, I don't know your name. I don't know what's come over me. You must think... You'll stay for fodder, though, won't you? Where the devil did you come from, incidentally?
He was looking round the room now. Something was upsetting him. He turned a full circle, turned twice, and took a few steps towards the bedroom. Suddenly he stopped being the sharp, self-assured young man who had materialized out of the dusk. I try even now to picture him, but his face is blurred. Can't explain what he looked like. I can't. There was something very wrong with him.
I say, old man, something queer. That's your vehicle out there. I've never seen.
How long did you say you've been here?
Mr. Milton, forgive me, but I don't quite understand what you're doing here.
Oh, Dave's been... He's been... I beg your pardon? You haven't...
I said I'm not sure what you're doing here. What do you want? Have you come over...
Want here? Are you all right, old man? I live here. This
you
is...
live here? Here?
Yes. Look, hang on a moment, will you?
Look, before we go any further...
What's your name?
He was regarding me as if I was just a little mad now. He was tense. It was as if he expected I might at any second fly at him and throttle him. Why in heaven's name he'd rung the old brass bell, I couldn't imagine. It weighed over 9 pounds, that bell. Came with the whole plantation. Had stood on that veranda for several decades. My name's Colin Hunt.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Hunt. Freetown?
Originally.
We don't get many visitors out here. The others will be back in a short while. Fetch the Ballywood tomorrow. I say, I'd like to offer you a little whiskey, but...
Oh, Barry, Kevin, it's gone. What's Dave been?
And then Philip Milton stared around the room and looked frightened. He closed his eyes for an instant and then opened them again and looked at me. By now, I decided he was mad. Dangerous, too. Strange thing is, he had decided that I was a lunatic, because he slowly backed away from me. There was a queer smile on his face. I was unarmed, but the gun cabinet was close. I wandered over to it. At that moment, he dived across the room.
Look, old boy, are you a friend of Dave's? I'll kill the old censor. I really will. He always did have a very peculiar sense of humor. Where the devil's the cupboard?
Then he seemed to catch sight of the open cabinet containing my rifles. I stood only partly obscuring it.
Well, what?
Please sit down, won't you? Is something wrong? You're not lost, are you? If you need to
all
get...
Right. If this is some kind of joke, it's very clever, but it's getting awfully boring now, you know. It's a bit eerie, actually.
Look, what the deuce have you done to the ceiling and the walls? You've made an awful mess. It's quite dreadful.
Mr. Milton, what do you want here? Have you got lost? You didn't come by car or anything, did you?
I think this has gone on long enough.
All right, you reprobate. I think you're awfully funny. You better come in and show me where you put the drink. We've got a visitor.
Philip, where's the car? Where did you get to?
Doesn't deserve a drink, does he, my sweet?
Yes, definitely he does.
Come on, darling.
There were questions I wanted to ask, obvious questions. Who was this man Milton? Who were his friends? What were they doing wandering about my property as if they owned it? Every time I tried to put one of these queries into words, Philip Milton did something incomprehensible, or he questioned me. Suddenly, I was aware of a silence. There'd been another man and a girl. Could they all be mad? There was no asylum for white people anywhere in Sierra Leone. I turned round quickly, meaning to arm myself. It's strange. One always expects burglars to be savage, not Eton and possibly Balliol.
Evening, Mr. Hunt. Phil tells me you're here to see us, but he doesn't seem to know where you've come from. Must say you've been rather busy, haven't you? Perhaps you wouldn't mind explaining just why you've redecorated and... Merciful heavens. You've completely... please, keep still. I have a pistol in this pocket. I won't hesitate to wound you. You may rest assured. I gather this is some kind of practical joke.
He wore a tattered bush jacket. He was tall, fair-haired, very good-looking. The faded shorts, which were really slacks cut or torn into shorts, might have been held up by means of an old Etonian tie. I wouldn't know an old Etonian tie if one came up and bit me, actually, but... He was burnt dark brown by the Sierra sun. The hair looked a bit ridiculous on his head. It was almost white. I don't think he did have a gun in his pocket.
I gather this is some kind of...
Who you are, any of you. I'd like to offer you hospitality, but I must insist that you stop threatening me in this ridiculous manner. I've no idea what you're talking about, and it would seem as if you're the people playing the joke.
David, all our things have gone. What is going on? It's all different everywhere. What's this man done with everything? What have you been doing here?
Phil, it's nothing to do with you, is it?
I've already told you. I thought you were...
All right, watch a minute, will you?
When you've finished leaping about my house as if it belongs to you...
That's some novel way of robbing us, Phil. You've succeeded in puzzling us, my friend. Very well played, sir. Now, stumps have been drawn. It's over. We've won. It's up to you now. Well, please explain, and then we'll have some special whiskey we keep only for guests.
Couldn't have done all this, David. Since... We only left the house at 9 o'clock this morning. Where's Willie? And Manya, where's Juju gone to? Dave, what's happening?
You left where at 9 o'clock this morning?
We left here at 9 o'clock this morning.
But you weren't here at 9 o'clock this morning.
How would you know? You weren't here at 9 o'clock this morning.
You're not an actor, are you? You're a terribly long way from London, you know.
This is my cocoa estate. I've told you my name. It's Colin Hunt.
Coco?
This is Kailala Wanjar. It means in Mende, a place of wild palms growing. Ancient name because there aren't any wild palms left as far up anymore, but we like the name. This is my wife, Anne Stewart. I'm David Stewart. You've met Philip Milton. We grow rice most unsuccessfully. We're really rather ruined, but we can't bear the thought of leaving. On the other hand, if you have taken a fancy to the place, I dare say we might be able to arrange...
That's
all right, my sweet. No one would ever buy Kailala Wanjar, only a collector of white elephants.
On the contrary, I bought it 8 years ago. You are trespassing, all of you. By British Government Act 1921, I could shoot the lot of you after challenging you twice to state your name and business here.
We really treat the place and the country as a refuge from the war. Philip and I were the most frightful cowards.
I expect Lord Kitchener's looking everywhere for us.
I mean, every chap from my year died in one battle. I just couldn't face going back now. I might meet their mothers.
I began to feel terribly afraid then. I felt as if I were being buried alive. Fiction writers talk of a shiver running up the spine, a prickly sensation under the scalp, or some other wretched imaginary feeling. Imaginary? I felt all of those things that night, and about 100 other sensations besides. I couldn't really imagine why. After all, the whole stupid business was only some large and well-planned practical joke. What else could it be? I suddenly felt a great need to state my case exactly. My claim to my plantation, my home. Without stopping, I told them when I'd bought the plantation. I told them of the work I'd done and something of my history. They listened patiently. Sometimes they glanced at one another, secretively. It was obvious they did not believe me. Then I began to understand who was mad. I decided it was me.
Well, that was a most interesting story, Mr. Hunt. Full marks.
Mm.
Do you write fiction, Mr. Hunt?
Complete fabrication, of course, the whole thing.
Fabrication? My dear sir, you're sitting in my house on my plantation. I've been here since 1927. What?
He's my dream man from the future. Darling, it's Mr. H.G. Wells.
Are you H.G. Wells? Doesn't look like H.G. Wells.
H.G. Wells? That fool.
I say, I'd like my heads back, old boy. Where have you hidden them?
Heads?
If he's stolen my bally heads, David, I shall kill him. My heads. The largest dwarf buffalo ever shot in this country. The elephant from Tanganyika. Mr. Hunt, if they're damaged, I swear I'll shoot you and put you up there on the wall.
How on earth did you paint all our walls?
All right, I've had enough.
Isn't it a marvelous thing, Dave, darling? We go to cut wood and picnic and fish one summer's day in 1919. And when we arrive home again, a gentleman says, "Go away, I have been here since 1927.
1927? Young woman, I'm afraid your idea of time, it's 1935. October 1935.
You are H.G. Wells, then. Where's your time machine?
Look, can't we finish all this now? I'm jolly hungry.
Perhaps...
1919. You're only right about the month, Mr. Hunt. They've just formed a very interesting little mess called the League of Nations. That won't last, of course.
You might be trying to drive me mad or something, but if you'll allow me to rise a moment... I'll show you something. We have to put up with the news somewhat out of date in this part of the world. Not as out of date as you seem to imagine, of course. Observe. August the 11th, 1935. It's now October the 25th, 1935. There you are. Ugly little so-and-so, isn't he? Never did like that kind of moustache. Herr Hitler, German forces build up. The phoenix will rise. Hmm? Versailles Treaty is worth just about nothing as far as Herr Hitler's concerned.
Let me see that. How did he get this?
It's not real.
London, August.
Mr. Hunt, you've laid elaborate plans. You must have some very clever friends. People, obviously, who can print, make... I'm impressed. Bewildered, but impressed. But I think it's all gone on long enough, don't you? Where are your friends? Let's all drink a toast to the English sense of humor. Where are our servants?
I think I need a drink more than anything, Mr. Hunt. My trophies are safe, I hope. The dwarf buffalo has great sentimental value, and the elephant we shot right up on the border.
And forgive my ignorance, but that tie, the one round your trousers, wouldn't be eaten, would it?
Yes, as a matter of fact. You too?
Nothing so grand. A very minor public school. So minor, in fact, it hardly existed.
And you were at this very minor public school from...
1912 until 1919.
You're quite mad, aren't you? You must be at least 40 years old.
David Stewart.
Pardon? Yes, I'm Stewart. I did tell you.
And then I was very afraid. Suddenly I knew where I'd seen those outrageously good looks before, that incredibly fair hair. He was a man of no more than 25, 26. His face came swimming back to me. My cricketer's yearbook. My one claim to fame, a photographic memory of those who wore flannels on the county grounds of England during the first three decades of the 20th century. David Stewart, opening bowler for Kent, the year 1912. You took 8 for 29 against Sussex in July 1912. I remember... I even remember the volume. The dog bit the corners off, and I was furious. But then, when you're young, we do get upset about unimportant things. You were on the verge of the test team to play against Australia, and then you disappeared out of the limelight. I'm afraid I know nothing of you after that.
I came to Africa, old boy. Me? Fight a war? Not one single chance. Give me that paper.
No one spoke for a long time. The three of them stood, almost in a straight line, I remember. The woman opened her mouth to speak once, and then wandered over to the window and looked out. She turned back again and saw the telephone.
Where did you get that?
It's a rotten service. I can get Freetown about once a year and Bow every other day. David Stewart walked over to the telephone. He examined the receiver
and then traced the wire to its power point. I was proud of that telephone. I was one of the very first to have a service that far from Bow, the southeastern province's capital. I was proud of the phone, despite the poor and unreliable working of it. Then I saw Stuart walk to the electric light switch. For the first time, I became aware of my faithful old generator. I was a pioneer. They'd laughed at me in Bow. The natives regarded me as a wizard. Suddenly, I wondered where my staff was. Where was Salima and Peter? There was a cook and Loco, the half-witted jack of all trades I kept out of pity. Stuart switched on the light, and all three of them stood aghast as the room was illuminated with my throbbing, uneven magic light. I suppose one might call me a pioneer, a Marconi of the electricity supply. The plantation was 2 decades ahead of its time, 1935. Why, even today?
David? What's happened to Galala Wanja? Darling?
I haven't managed refrigeration here yet, so the water's tepid. It has been boiled. The whiskey kills anything nasty there may be in it, though.
We went down into the valley. I remember going down into... I said the sky was getting cloudy and we might have rain. But there wasn't any rain. Was there? No. You sharpened the axe, David, and the sun went in for a little while. I remember. And you chopped at a tree, Philip. And the axe went in deep. A long, long way. I had a headache. We didn't chop any wood. No wood at all. Why did you come up here for the cart, Phil?
Cart? I came for the cart to... for the wood.
I remember a Jar Jar bird shrieked and flew away to the east as if it was hurt. We went for the wood and... you hit the tree hard. I remember because it seemed... as if lots and lots of axes hit lots and lots of trees... all across the valley. Jar bird shrieked and flew away to the east as if it was hurt. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers.
David Stuart, who took 8 for 29 against Sussex, walked from the room, and his wife and the man Philip followed him. They went through the open door, out onto the veranda, and down the steps. I didn't follow. While the girl had been talking, one of the men, Philip Milton, I think it was, played with my famous electric light switch. He clicked it off and on. The light was poor. It flickered on and off. But it was good enough to show me something else that convinced me that my visitors were not of this world. Not of my time. When I noticed this about Milton, I saw that it was so with the other two as well. It was not so with me. And I felt as if I were keeping hold of my sanity and my grip on my own time and place. In the room, with the electric light and the curtains not drawn and the dark outside, those three people didn't have any shadows. I didn't go to bed that night. I just sat and drank whiskey. I can taste even now the warm, rather unpleasant fire of the liquor. When the light came again, I went down into the valley. I didn't know what I was looking for until I found it. In a big, long-dead cotton tree, I discovered an old rusted axe. It was nearly 5 inches into the wood. It needed a big man with strong hands to do that. Put it that deep into the cotton tree. It had been there for a long time. It was as if, in 1919, three people went to cut wood and never came back until 16 years had passed. It was as if time caught, like the corner of a coat on a nail, tore, ruptured.
I remember a Jar Jar bird shrieked and flew away to the east as if it was hurt. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers.